So we have six. So I don't know if we're on the air yet. Okay, we're on. And we want to again thank the stations around the network that are broadcasting this meeting. It's very important to have this process of these meetings where decisions are made about the next steps in this organization, to have this all be as public as possible. And certainly the webcasting and the broadcasting helps us do that. So we want to thank folks at WBAI in New York, at WPFW here in Washington, KPFA in the Northern California Bay Area, and in KPFK in Southern California, where I believe at least parts of this meeting today are being broadcast. So we very much appreciate that, and all the websites. I'm sorry I don't have the URLs right in front of me for the websites, but KPFTX, WBIX, I'm not sure if they're on, and of course the stations that are broadcasting on their websites, they're also web streaming. And again, we want to thank the crews here in Washington that work with us on the technical end and people at each of the stations and websites that make all that possible. It is a tremendous help. We have, you know, again, a full agenda this morning that we're going to try and move through as orderly a fashion as possible. We're in a different room, for those of you who are here, obviously you know that. And it really, though, given the nature of the room that we're in this morning, it really means that people need to not have the side conversations. The acoustics in here, you know, every sound will reverberate. So if people need to talk, we'd appreciate if you go out to the hallway, just because the sound in here is going to be very, very difficult. So let me see. Let me just review the agenda. We're going to start this morning with an update and report on personnel issues, and we're joined by Joyce Snowden, who is the Human Resources Director for the Foundation, and David Furtick, the Chair of our Board Committee on Personnel Issues. They're going to do that. Then we will move into station reports. And actually, I want to change the order of the station reports and put the two West Coast stations at the end because of the time difference. I got an email last night from somebody on the West Coast concerned about the time difference. So we're going to try and make those, the West Coast ones, in the later part of that reporting section. So hopefully more West Coast folks will be up and listening. We will hear a report from our director of the archives program, Brian Shazer, and have some time for discussion about the next steps in the campaign to really raise the resources that are needed for the archives to do the restoration and preservation work they need to do. I also want to put into the agenda, and actually maybe we can do it right after the personnel report, the item that I passed out on Friday night, the memo from Matthew Lazar about the FCC. That's a very important concern about what they're up to. So that's our overview. I'm going to try and bring this meeting to a close by 2 or 2:30. People have planes to catch and other obligations. Am I missing something? Oh, I'm sorry, our meeting schedule. All we did yesterday on the meeting schedule was a plan for another special meeting, the January 31st, February 1st weekend. But we do have to look at that as well. So we will make sure to get that in. Okay, I think we should begin. So let me turn this over to David Furtick, the chair of this committee. Yes, Teresa. No. I want to do that right after the personnel. Okay. I want to do that right after the personnel.
Good morning, and good very early morning to our friends at KPFK 90.7 in Southern California. Dave Furtick here from the Pacific and National Board, Interim National Board Personnel Committee. First, I want to thank all of our staff, the paid and unpaid staff from the National Office, the Archives, the WPFW, KPFK, WBAI, KPFA, and KPFT staff. I mean, these are the people, the paid and unpaid staff, volunteers, workers that make this foundation rock, that give its voice. And you, I'm sure all of y'all are listening out there. You're the ones that animate Pacifica and move its mission. That makes it possible. And we need to recognize that the listeners and supporters that fund it, that listen, that carry that end of the bargain, is fulfilled. That bargain is fulfilled by the people that work here. And I want to thank all of you people that do the work for bringing so much beauty into an ugly and mean world. Now, that's your paycheck this week. So, Joyce, how much did we save with that? Anyway, okay. So, but I also want to acknowledge our human resources manager, Joyce Snowden, and woman helping her, Melissa Johnson Bay, for their dedicated work. The day-to-day hands-on work these two have done on a daily basis is really enormous under difficult circumstances. And they've even helped organize this great meeting we've been having here in D.C. And most sane people in the human resources manager's job, such as Joyce's, would have left running, screaming into the night from all the changes and problems that have been thrown at her in this past year. But she stayed in the trenches, doing the difficult work of coordinating with the 7 different places, the 5 stations, national office, and the archives. And I just want to especially thank Joyce and Melissa for that work. Now, she'll report in a moment on a variety of things, the number of paid employees, payroll issues, and hires and processes. But I'll just talk generally about the task of the personnel committee. It includes working with the human resources staff to help make sure that the policies get implemented and can be implemented, and see that the policies protect the staff as well as the mission. And it relates to not just personnel policies typically, but in Pacifica, the unique, because it also deals with on-air conduct, race and diversity issues, search committees, and any number of other issues that can relate to people in Pacifica. But as an interim board, we got to remember that we have to address matters which are both urgent and important. But some important matters are not urgent, and we got to reserve those, particularly in terms of policy changes and interpretations, for the soon-to-be-elected ongoing board, because they'll be more accountable. And, you know, we need to recognize that we have to hold off, but we also have to deal with pressing issues. And it's been tough, because we've been really preoccupied with the bylaws, and we're all in fire-putting-out mode. And so, like I said, we need to be thoughtful about what we see things we want to change, but we shouldn't change those things unless we have to. Hopefully, many of you in the audience here and on the air will have those difficult decisions to grapple with, and not us. But we do have litigation. We have confidential issues and other matters which we can't really discuss publicly, but which have to be dealt with on a daily matter. Now, other matters which we do need to discuss are guidelines and models for grievance processes for paid staff, unpaid staff, and management, as well as job descriptions, desk audits, in which a realistic assessment is objectively made as to what a person actually does day to day on their job, as opposed to what the job description says. So these are the kind of things that we're supposed to be doing. And thanks to Joyce and Melissa and other staff, some of these things are getting done. And some of the labs are instituting local personnel committees to help do that under the direction of the Human Resources Department, let's say. No offense, Joyce. You're not a whole department. Well, you are the whole department. And these have to happen because, as we heard last night or yesterday, we're going to be continuing this interim stretch probably into the mid-year of 2003. So we really can't put these things off. So I'm hoping that the local advisory boards and the National Personnel Committee will, in an organized and disciplined manner, you know, work to fulfill our duties. It's a lot of work. I mean, it's not as sexy and fun as bylaws, but there you go. Now, we have some things that we can talk about. And I will say this, in terms of confidential litigation matters, that there's been an action by a former general manager for severance pay based upon a promise by the former executive director, and that was dismissed by a state labor commissioner. However, the claim may be brought again in the state court. One former executive director has an action pending, but it appears this action is not being hard-fought, and the outcome looks good, but it still must be fought on our part. We still must be careful about it. And then of 4 cases pending before the National Labor Relations Board, 2 have been dismissed and 2 remain. Now having terrified Dan and fear that I might be disclosing delicate matters, no, he shakes his head no. I will turn over to Joyce for the hard facts. Thank you, Joyce.
Good morning. How is everyone today?
Okay.
All right. Let me quickly get into this report and give you a few pointers of what goes on in the Human Resources Department. Pacifica employs 169 full-time eligible and part-time eligible staff, in the four broad employment categories of administration, programming, operations, and development. Broad categories. Pacifica engages somewhere between about 3,000 and 4,000 volunteers at our five radio stations. And they are performing jobs very broadly as programmers, operators, clerical support, development support, fund drive outreach, and other support activities throughout the year. Pacifica, through its human resources officer, administers a comprehensive benefits package that includes medical, dental, prescription, long-term disability, short-term disability, life insurance, 403Bs, along with the other mandatory risk insurance required by law. Administering employment practices within three states and the District of Columbia, the HR office is continually researching and reviewing employment law to keep current with changes in the respective laws and provide a level of support to all five signal areas. HR provides consultative services through a variety of methods in the process of section and recruitment, evaluation, setting performance objectives, discipline, and discharge. About 85% of the human resources office's time is devoted to employee relations. The human resources office operates with only one full-time employee. That would be me. We periodically employ temporary help, particularly when we are preparing for our board meetings. We also get help from other members of the staff. I want to give a special thank you to both Melissa Johnson Bay and Robert West, who worked diligently on this particular project to get this board meeting prepared and off the ground. Human Resources Office is also the lead resource in providing support to the National Board for its in-person meetings and conference calls that take place throughout the year. So ongoing, we are providing support for the board meetings and conference calls and other events that happen through the board throughout the year. Since January, we have hired about 86 new staff members and throughout the network, that is, and have had 63 terminations. The termination category is inclusive of employees separated due to resignation and resignation release with or without cause. So people may have initiated moving on and may have had problems at the network and moved on for other reasons. In reviewing unit staffing throughout Pacifica and through anecdotal conversation with national office staff, station staff, and employee management consultants retained by Pacifica, the current employment practices of Pacifica actually raises the cost of keeping employees, it contributes to staff turnover, and diminishes employee morale. By employing many full-time eligible employees and fostering full-time positions and not taking total advantage of all of our volunteer opportunities and not looking at the total picture of what everyone is performing and doing and haven't had time to do desk audits throughout the network. In some respect, we inhibit ourselves from fully taking advantage of everyone's ability to perform at a greater extent and provide more services to us. Some of the reasons that I have found that so much time is spent on employee relations are that we all claim and proclaim that we are progressive, but with many discussions that I have heard throughout the network and with many individuals, I have found that we have a tendency to create a climate of distrust, fear, and intimidation amongst ourselves due to our inner fighting, and that creates an abundance of work for human resources. I have seen it. I have felt it. I have talked with many of you all about it. We need to work on that. Diversity, we say, we value it, but we don't necessarily practice it. I have seen that if someone does not agree with an expressed viewpoint, the reaction within the organization is to become rigid, narrow, and then accusatory, as if that person attended the wrong school, grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, or worked for the wrong organization. We need to be more understanding of each other's diversity. The type of attitude that I've described breeds a climate of suspicion and intimidation. It makes people think that they cannot trust each other. And for the most part, I think we all are very well-meaning individuals, and we can do better at trusting each other. As a person who values diversity, Pacifica, for myself and for the organization, Pacifica needs to work harder on listening to what others have to say, digesting comments and opinions, and being less reactive and defensive, being more responsive. We need to have a common ground for a truly progressive and diverse think tank where opinions are respected and attitudes and egos are not a part of the equation. I want to just take a few minutes also and talk about due process. I know throughout the network a lot of people believe that due process is non-existent. I would like it to be clear that it is very existent. We have a process for just about everything that we do. We are working harder to make sure that it is consistent. We have recently given our managers performance objectives that they must follow. As a human resources director, in no uncertain terms, are any employees evaluated according to anything but their performance objectives? We do not in any way evaluate or discipline staff based on race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation, or political ideology. Performance is evaluated on face value against clear objectives and job descriptions. Let the rumors be still. New hires typically have 6 months to get up to speed and may be coached in some way throughout those 6 months. Fairness, due process, and accountability are the key components of our evaluations, including those for our general managers. In a new effort to ensure fairness, due process, and accountability, we are evaluating our general managers with a 360-degree review process, which includes feedback from our staff and our lab members. Our office will respect this process and hold our managers accountable for their performance. I also want to speak to the attitude that is prevalent within our working stations, and it is the me attitude. Everything we say and do, I would say pretty much two-thirds of our population, volunteers and paid staff alike, have very much a me attitude. It's not about what is best for the organization. It's not about what is best for my coworker. It is only about what is best for me. A lot of the actions and reactions are driven by me. What is in it for me? Now, as the foundation's mission, we all know the me attitude does not fit We have got to do better. We are supposed to be progressive. I don't think that includes the me attitude. We all need to work harder and better and be patient and listen and try to understand the other person's point of view. We talk about diversity in almost every discussion that I have overheard. That does not include me. What that means is that we value what someone else may have to say. We can't hear it if we are planning our next statement while they are talking. I want to just go on and give a definition. I want to close out with a definition of affirmative action, somewhat, and of valuing diversity. Affirmative action is grounded in moral and social responsibility to amend wrongs done in the past to those Americans who were not of a majority population. Again, the focus was and has been on increasing the representation of minorities and females in the workforce to reflect their availability in the labor market. We utilize this method in our hiring process to provide talented, experienced, and qualified represented groups an opportunity to work with us in our foundation. Valuing diversity. According to Roosevelt Thomas, the next evolution of diversity is best referred to as valuing diversity. The main objectives of valuing diversity include awareness, education, positive recognition of the differences among people in the workforce. Valuing diversity extends beyond affirmative action in that it is not solely based on changing the representation of various types of people in the workplace. Valuing diversity builds upon the critical foundation laid by workplace equity initiatives. The focus of this intervention is on recognizing the uniqueness in everyone, valuing the contribution that each can make, and creating an inclusive work environment. That's all for today, folks.
Okay. Thank you. I want to thank Joyce not only for this report, but again for all the hard work that I know you do, and as was mentioned earlier, not only on the personnel issues, but on every and any and every issue that is thrown your way, that you're always there and jumping in. And I want to thank you especially for this report and overview about what's going on around the network on you know, the issues that you raise. I think it was very helpful. Are there questions or comments from the board? Carol?
I didn't hear, I know you said how many paid employees we have. Could you just repeat that?
169.
And could you give the board a copy of your report?
I certainly can. I will make copies for you guys.
Could you do it to me?
I didn't bring any extra copies. I ran to the office this morning and ran back.
I'd like an email copy that's electronic. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah, actually, you can do that. You can email it to everybody. You don't have to
print
them out.
Okay. I'll do that.
Except, obviously, the board members that don't have email.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Rob?
Yeah, Joyce, I'm just wondering if there are some training models that you've run across in your experience that we might be able to work with the Race and Diversity Committee on and try to find some training that we can use at the station level for volunteers, for labs, station staff, to kind of create some dynamics about how to work. What are some models that we can apply in doing very simple things in which people can work together in a more respectful and a less me-driven?
There is a great deal of training modules that I have seen run across research since I've been here due to the overwhelming need. They cost money. As soon as I can find some funding or some room in the budget, I will get it and do a road show. I mean, absolutely.
Would you work with some of us on the board? Would you let us be your supporters
in
making sure that happens? Because we have a responsibility to show some leadership.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Susan, did you want
to? Yes, I would like to say something. Joyce, thank you very much for all your hard work. I know that this is an incredibly difficult position that you hold. However, what you're describing in terms of processes, I've been involved in BAI for a long time. I've never seen any of those things being put into effect at my station. So as part of the roadshow, I would hope that maybe you could bring some of those processes, evaluation,
yes,
of staff. I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of how the
process actually works.
Or that it does.
Okay.
And the criteria, who evolved them? I know we at BAI, staff members were never invited to be involved in the process. I think what we need at Pacifica are processes. I think we're bereft of them. And I think that part of our rebuilding process is putting in processes that are fair to all, but will allow an organization to do what it is that we want to do. So I encourage you to get some processes to us that will allow us to function rather than to dysfunction. Thank you.
Okay. Ed, thank you. Jabari.
Jabari Zakia. Given history of the United States and the fact that we're all Americans, which means that everything American is embedded in us, no less than in other people. I'm trying to assess what is the real cost that would be required of the foundation, not just in terms of outlays and money, but in terms of substantial and fundamental operational changes that would have to take place, and not only with paid staff, because paid staff is the least amount of the people who are associated or claim to associate themselves with Pacifica, and especially in light of this restructuring of the governing of the organization, where you will have, in maybe some large capacities, so-called volunteers who will have more authority but no accountability and responsibility, because a volunteer can just walk away at any time, and that's it. You know, they can't get fired because they don't get paid. And they can cause a lot of disruption with really no consequences, no fundamental consequences other than verbal. So, you know, in my mind, all our GMs need to be trained in, you know, in the history and the real some real stuff about Pacifica, so they walk into these battlegrounds with some sense of reality of what has occurred and what is occurring and what needs to occur. And the same needs to be done with, I think, regular employees. It's sad that how I feel most regular employees don't know anything about Pacifica. They know their particular position and description, but they can't cite what are the other four stations in the network that they, you know, besides their own station and that kind of thing. I think all employees need 2 weeks of orientation just before they even start their job to say, okay, here's Pacifica, and we're not like any other job you're going to walk into. And you know, this is probably going to take decades and decades to implement, and you got to start now. But
okay.
Any comments?
Yeah, I do have comments on that, and I do believe that we need an extensive orientation program and process. It doesn't necessarily have to be 2 weeks for all employees. Definitely a two-week program for new managers is necessary. Training across the network is necessary. Before you can do these kind of things, You really need to have some investment in your human resources department. There is no investment here. I'm a one-person shop. The person coming after me will hopefully not have to deal with being a one-person shop. Human resources is very broad. There is so much that goes on day to day. I juggle 30, 40 things a day, 5 or 6 at one time. A lot of areas need work. A lot of areas need attention. Basic administration is hard to do with just me. They need a dedicated benefits analyst just to handle benefits and compensation. That's a huge area all by itself. Includes salary analysis, includes pay raises, structuring pay grades. There's a lot of work all over human resources that is necessary. Affirmative action, diversity coordinator. I mean, there is enough work for a full department to be able to service the entire network. There are things that I am doing because other stations do not want to do it. Stations want to be completely on their own, but the work I do is not always fun, not always nice, and no one else wants to really be a part of it. When you're giving out bonuses and pay raises, it's great and fun. When you're giving out disciplinary actions and terminations, nobody wants to be a part of that. There's a lot that goes on in human resources. There's a lot of work. There's even outside of human resources, I even serve as like a technical resource because I have the background. There is a lot of work here. There is not, and there needs to be two of me and two staffers. There's just no investment here. What we need to do and what we can do is just not the same. There isn't any money for it.
Okay, well, I think you've obviously laid out the challenges. I don't know that we can meet those challenges immediately or even in the short term, but it does lay out a perspective for the development of this work. Okay, one quick question, and then that's where
The first question is, in terms of that this is a report, and I have previous experience. One point, I'm trying to get some information, some report, and I asked one of the national board member to get that information, and he said, "Oh no, you cannot get that." And I just wonder if you're going to have access to that report as a lab, or that's going to be only
school
area.
I'm not sure what you're asking for. Copies of
right,
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Copies
okay.
of my report.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will,
okay. And my second question is quick. In terms of the break, you said that there is 169 employees. If you can give like some idea in terms of the breakdown.
I don't have the breakdown.
You don't have the breakdown. Okay.
I only have the numbers.
And the last.
Go on.
And the last question is in terms of the. Sometimes I hear some of those committee, which is really doing a wonderful work, and I noticed that there is a tendency sometimes to create a jar through those volunteer committees, and I just wonder if there is, and sometimes I have some concern with that because ended with a jar with somebody we not really process, and I feel a little bit uncomfortable because I know that person been doing like a wonderful job and deserve that job, but at some point I feel like should other people have the opportunity to apply for this job? It seems to me like somehow people create a job or a position that, you know, ended to being a job with no process. And I just wonder, and I'm not trying to create controversy, but if we can take a look at that and how Pacifica can deal with that issue.
I may need more information about that. I have no idea what you're talking about as far as creating a job out of a search committee. I'm not out of
any committee. That is,
I'd need more information.
Okay.
I really don't follow.
More information at some point in
time. Okay, that's good. I mean, what I'm hearing from Joyce is a very, while she's on overload, she also is very interested in hearing from people and getting not their questions, but their ideas and points of view. So I think that's also an attitude that we want to encourage more of throughout the network, not only sharing our points of view, but hearing other people's points of view. Carol?
What I'm hearing from Joyce is that we're our internal strife and struggle and perhaps attitudinal problems are costing us a lot of money. And our budget, as she pointed out, it's not that we don't want to invest, it's that we can't. And there are so many other things that we would really like to be focusing on, such as programming. You know, we may have to cut programming. Our budget is so seriously out of balance. So think about that when you fight with your neighbor.
Thank you. All right, David.
Yeah, I just want to chime in real quick. You know, with the three less board meetings, we would have an extra person in that office. And I think, too, another point I want to make is, and I think it goes true relative to all of our interactions with committees, as well as Joyce and all the other staff. When we make a demand or a request or we have a suggestion and a great idea of more work for someone else to do, if we're not, as individuals, willing to do that work or make it easier for the person upon whom we are foisting this wonderful idea of more things to put on their plate, if we're not willing to do that ourselves or make it possible for them, then let's just tend to our own messes that we got to deal with.
Okay, can we move on? Jabari.
I just kind of I'm in disagreement with Carl that we can't pay for it. One of the things I've been trying to just continually reiterate is that the foundation isn't doing a budgetary process based on a methodical breakdown and analysis of what its real needs are. We go through and spend money based on what is urgent at the time, and we never sit down and do a thorough evaluation of the foundation and its actual needs versus its desires. Okay, right. It's just basic strategic and structural planning. And I'm there in the office, and I see Joyce, and I hear the kind of stuff she works with. What basically she's saying is, look, the foundation ain't going nowhere until we get these people problems straight. And if you're not willing to pay the money to get the people problems straight, you're not going to go anywhere. We're just going to wallow in the same division and unproductive use of people's times and energy. I myself think that this is such a priority idea because every $1 you spend in training and in personal development, you get $10 or more back in productivity. So we're taking a lackluster sense of the significance of this if we say we can't fund this. I say, damn it, we can fund it if we fund everything else we want to fund. We can fund this if we wanted to do it. You know, so I don't agree with that statement that we can't fund it, we don't have the money. We can find money to do any and everything else that we've done so far. We hold meetings that we don't have money to hold. We get in contracts that we don't have money to pay for. We do a lot of things that we don't have. We're paying debts that we don't have money to pay for. So if we sat down and said, this is important, and it costs X amount of money to do at least this stage of it, we can do it. So I don't agree with the statement. It's up to the board to decide what is significant, what is important, and what is necessary. This is necessary, significant, and important.
Let me just, I agree. This is significant and important, and the money has to be found for it. The money, though, when we say it has to be found for it, it's not only in the national office budget. Each station has to put some of its resources into, many of these issues are at the station level, and the stations need to pay for some of this stuff. Right. If it's trainings, if it's mediators, if it's, whatever it is. I mean, it's not always out of the national right. office budget. We have to find the money at the local level as well. Okay, Rob, and then we really need to move on.
Just a historical perspective on what I think Jabari is getting at, Leslie. A lot of the dereliction on this board has come traditionally from our reluctance to face up to the fact that as a network, we have to look at the issues of fundraising and development. And as long as I've been on the board and watched the board has gone to great lengths, and people all over the network like to invoke the notion that we can't raise any money except for the money that comes directly from the listeners. So we fought, the national office, Pacifica, has fought year after year after year with the stations for the money that the station stations raise from their listeners and don't provide them enough in return. One of the things that this board must do is begin looking at the issue of fundraising and development to support national functions. That's what Jabari is talking about. And there are a lot of people in this network that like to say, no, we don't want to do that because that pollutes the mission. The reality is that the board's refusal to face head-on our lack of policies, lack of plans for fundraising and development have starved the network and have created much of the conflict that we continue to deal with.
Okay, so let's move on. Obviously, there's a lot of excellent material raised by both David and Joyce's report. And again, we want to thank Joyce for the very, very incredible work you do. Thank you again. Okay, before we move to the next agenda item, as I said earlier, I want to do actually two quick things. One is the memo, and if anybody doesn't have a copy of it, I think I have some extra copies. The memo that I handed out the other night that we got from Matthew Lazar. Anybody need a copy? Do you guys have it? Okay. George, you have it? Teresa has it? Okay, great. There's few extras.
I only look asleep.
What?
I only look asleep.
She took whatever we got. We don't have a lot of copies here. I'm going to read it, though. I'm hoping that this will not be controversial. Let me say right up front, I'm hoping that this will not be controversial and we can do this very quickly and come to agreement on it. Just to set the context, Matthew Lazar is, as I think everyone knows, the official, unofficial, whatever, historian. He literally wrote the book about Pacifica and is now writing the second book. And if he's listening, I hope he is listening, we very much appreciate the incredible work that he does. I don't know if everybody really appreciates, I'm sure Brian at the archives appreciates, what it means to record our history. And to keep track of the history of this organization. And that's actually, people turn to Matthew every single day with needing information and insights of, you know, that are based, that we call from that history. So we want to thank him. In addition, though, to being the historian for us, he also does a lot of work keeping track of what's going on in the media in this country. So this comes from him about that issue. And it's a proposal that he hopes one of us will move as a motion. Let me read it. It's not too long. It's dated Friday, December 6th. Statement of the Pacifica Governing Board regarding the Federal Communication Commission's impending hearings on media ownership rules. Let me say, I hope someone from the FCC is also listening today. The Pacifica Governing Board wishes to express deep concern over the Federal Communication Commission's plans to abandon its media ownership rules. The commission has reluctantly agreed to hold hearings in Richmond, Virginia in February 2003 before changing the rules. But it appears that key commissioners have already made up their minds about the matter and are poised to eliminate the following four regulations. One, a national cap preventing broadcasting corporations from owning enough stations to reach over 35% of the national audience. Two, a cap preventing cable corporations from reaching over 30% of the audience. Three, a rule blocking broadcasters from owning a newspaper and a TV station in the same major market. And four, even a rule blocking the major networks from merging with each other. The FCC claims that new broadband technologies have made present ownership caps irrelevant. But what will it matter that Americans will be able to access hundreds of radio and television stations if most are owned by a few corporations? Democracy means a diversity of media owners, not an overflow of channels and websites offering roughly the same formats and political viewpoints. We have already seen the impact of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which allows corporations to buy an unlimited number of radio stations nationally and up to 8 stations in major regional markets. The act resulted in the creation of broadcasting giants like the Clear Channel Corporation and a troubling decline in what little local programming existed in commercial radio. Many radio stations now have completely automated programming schedules. Some estimate that the Telecommunications Act has eliminated as many as 10,000 jobs from the